Welcome back to Aether and Dark Saga. Well, surprise, surprise, things haven't gone to plan. So instead of releasing a two-part finale like I had planned, there's now going to be three parts. So technically, the finale is still to come, and this is the penultimate episode. Just like the last episode, there's not going to be any quick recap at the start of each of the characters' perspectives. This is mainly due to save time. The episode's already over an hour long. So, with that in mind, Aether and Dark Saga is a dark fantasy audio drama. It contains themes of violence and is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Chapter 1, Part 14, B. Anvidar. The fabric of the robe felt cool as it pressed against his battle-marked skin. His head was freshly shaven and had caught the light with a sheen as the thin, film-like layer of anointing oil glistened in the torchlight. He was knelt, his hands resting upon his thighs, eyes closed and head bowed as Sigil stepped around him. The icon of knowledge, whose hands were clasped around a heavy tome with small jewels that glistened upon its thick leather binding, waved incense and uttered incantations in a language Anvidar did not know. An intricately detailed pattern surrounded him. With shallow channels, chiselled and polished smooth into the stone flooring, tracing out the edges of a powerful glyph. Purified and blessed water had been poured within these channels, and as the power gathered within the glyph, so too did the water move, flowing with a steady current. It was not long before the luminescent green flourished within the liquid, blending like an ink pen dipped into clear water. Then, in a matter of seconds, all of the liquid shone with the same verdant green light, rippling as if under vibration, rising in tiny spikes like a thousand hands reaching up from the glyph. The glyph served not only as a ward of protection for Anvidar, but as a device to shield Sigulf and Kreia from the immense forces they now summoned. Any mistake made now would result in not only Anvidar's death, but the death of all within the chamber. Within the Order's annals, previous failures had been documented, and without the correct safeguarding, fatalities were sure to follow. Luckily, the meticulous nature of both Kreia and Sigulf had made certain every precaution was taken. Much was at stake should they fail, least of all, their own lives. Unlike Sigulf, Kreia held first-hand experience of the ritual. She had endured the joining herself, gifting over a portion of her soul in return for a piece of Galador's, benefiting from the mighty power such an act brought with it. The statue of Galador before him seemed almost alive, with the green light illuminating from beneath him, casting a swaying shadow which gave the appearance of movement as it rose from the altar. The huge granite depiction towered above him, its outstretched arms cradling the chalice atop. This was how it finally ended, he thought. Galador knew he'd spent the best part of a decade running from this very moment, and this, his only act of cowardice, had cost him dearly. It all seemed like a punishment. Felt like this was his just rewards for shirking his oath-bound duty, and now, looking back after all this time, what did he have to show for it? Nothing. Yima was dead. Her death a result of him running away in fear of this ritual. No, he thought. Not because he feared the ritual. He fled because he could not bear to be without her. He could not brave the thought of leaving her behind if he ceased to be the man she loved. ceased being Anvidar entirely, and instead assumed the form he would have to take. But the most painful part was knowing if he had held true to his duty, faced the ritual like a knight of the order should have, Yima would still be alive. The hour was upon them. The time had come. No longer would he have to wait. Kriya raised her hands up, blood pouring from her upturned palms as the fuel for her powerful magics began to flow.
Remove your robe, Anvidar.
Shrugging his well-built shoulders and untying his belt, the robe fell away, exposing his chest, a patchwork of battle scars and sigils marked deep into his skin. Kriya now stepped in front of him, her eyes shining in the dark room, casting shadows upon her tattooed visage. Laid in display across her bloody open hands was a blade. His blade. The arming sword he had named Breaker, and its clean razor edge glinted in the emerald hue from below.
Put out your arms.
Anvidar levelled his arms, holding the muscular limbs out parallel, with palms open, facing the icon of magics. His gaze met with hers, and after a quick release of breath, he gave a small, consenting nod. Kriya slid the blade in a swift cutting motion, slicing a thin gash across the Icon of War's exposed palms. Blood quickly pooled and flowed out, running in rivulets down his forearms, the fluid gathering at his now bent elbows, dripping steadily onto the ground. Though none saw it, one of the many droplets which trickled in steady succession finally splashed into the purified water. Like a flame to pitch, the water ignited. Not only did it catch fire, but it surged upwards. The rivers of blood were now trails of fire, rushing up his arms and into his open wounds. Anvidar felt the burning instantly. His mouth wide in pain, yet no roar was there to accompany the agony. Only the luminous green fire which spewed forth from his silent cry. His steel-grey orbs rolled into the back of his head as he shook. A terrible tremor forced him to the ground, curling into the fetal position as he clawed at his throat. The pain was immense, unlike anything he could fathom, yet now here for the order he suffered. Each second felt like a decade, as the events of his life whirred by like passing trees on horseback. Every moment of joy, every feeling of heartbreak melded into one drawn-out sense of being consumed, drowning in the celestial flame of his god. He reached out, his hand paralyzed, fingers locked in a claw-like convulsion as the green flame poured out of all of his head-bound orifices. Mouth, nose, eyes and ears all bloomed with the emerald waterfalls of liquid fire.
Drink it, Anvidar, hurry!
Sigild had retrieved the chalice from the statue of Galador's hands. Hurriedly, he passed the drinking vessel over to Anvidar. The dark red fluid inside was almost black and sloshed in his panicked movements. Anvidar fought on. His body was pushed to its limits as the godly flames tortured him from within.
You need to take the cup. Drink it! Drink it, damn you! Anvidar! You need to drink it now!
Sigulf continued to shout at him, continued his pleas as panic took hold, yet the world was gone for Anvidar. He could no longer perceive it. It was not replaced by silence and darkness, but instead, the infinite spanned before his sightless eyes. Stars and other worlds spread to the limits of an unseen horizon. Beings of pure energy and light moved within the voids. Was this the gods he fought? Was this the great halls of eternity? 1,000,001 voices called out his name, yet he could not recognize one of them. He was struck by an overwhelming sense of detachment. No longer were the worries of life his. No more did he wonder when he could next eat, or when he would next drink. How or when would he die? What would become of the Order? Who would stop the darkness? Now, here, in the Never, the present but timeless. Amvidar, the icon of war, warrior of the Argent Order, no longer existed. It was merely a persona, a life once forgotten, a dream.
This is wrong, Kreer. Send word to Ulrich. We need him here now. Hurry! Amvidar! By Galador, not you! Not now! Amvidar!
Sigmir. The high walls and sheer size of Kalimdor had surprised him. The number of citizens and the bustling city life within those walls had shocked him again. And now, after entering Vengarth, Sigmir was almost incapable of speech. He'd wondered to himself that if men could create such beauty here in this world, what incredible sights awaited in the shadowlands of the gods. His belly was full and fat, and it felt good to have eaten such a meal. He ate the fruits, which were beyond ripe, but were still taste-filled and sweet. He drank, perhaps a little too much of the mead he'd been offered, preferring the taste to the strong flavour of Orin's favourite wine. But, above all else, he had gorged himself on the salted cow meat those around him had called beef. And if this was a staple of the Order's diet, he was ready to make his stay now. Both he and Orin, his newest friend, sat alone in the mess hall. 30 or so empty wooden tables remain unoccupied, all but one, the one nearest the doorway. Here sat three armed squires, the same three who were tasked to observe Orin's movements within Vengarth. Sigmir had become part of the Order and was now an initiate. Orin, on the other hand, was barely allowed within the temple fortress.
Hey, how's the food, Sigmir?
Very good. How is your wine?
Yeah, running low. Can we have some more wine, good innkeep?
One of the observing squires began to rise, and as he did so, was pulled back down into his seating, his companion's face filled with outrage.
I think you've had enough.
I wish I had a silver for every time I'd been told that. Fair enough. I'll go ask, Amvidar.
The squires looked at one another, as Orin, who had no intent of doing so, feigned in rising to his feet.
More of the red?
That would be most kind of you.
Orin, what do you think has happened to Breidik?
I don't know, lad. Where'd you say he'd gone?
Draedon. It's a fortress, I think.
That's a border fort. It's a good distance from us. Amvidar's likely right. He'll be on his way here, lad.
I worry. If all that's been happening...
Look, I know, but he can take care of himself. Hey, he's a big one, that Amvidar, isn't he?
Yes. He would be considered tall and broad, even amongst the Vin.
Aye. He's similar in rank to Kreer. I got no worries or something. Makes sense when you look at him, eh?
When do you think I will get to see the bookhouse?
It's called the library, lad. And I couldn't say. I don't know much about this lot other than the rumours that you hear.
Rumours?
Come on. Even the Ven know who the Argent Order is, lad. Just the old stories. Nothing to worry about. Just a bunch of self-righteous do-gooders. But what I've seen lately, maybe that's what these lands need.
Orin, are you worried about... you know?
What do you think they're here for? Look, I trust Kreer. After all she's told me... well, you know what I mean. Whatever is going on, this is the place to get answers. Answers for both of us. Saying that, that grumpy twat Sigulf didn't have any. All I got from him was a scar. Hey... don't forget, I'm not the only one who's had a revelation.
Sigmir nodded. Even now he was unsure of the truth. Braedic had confirmed what the entity within Orin had said. He was the son of Olaf Druin, a powerful but cruel man, a lord of the Drakenweald of Ballora. That place was a world away from where he was now, yet his life had been turned upside down in its learning. A sudden commotion forced his attention away as an Order member appeared in the doorway. A grey-haired man dressed in a tunic and trews, yet a sword belt and elaborate scabbard hung at his waist.
On your feet! The Grand Master has called a war council. All are to be present. No delay will be tolerated. Hurry!
Without word, the three squires ran for the doorway, pushing past the newcomer.
Listen, lad, I'm not part of you.
It wasn't a request. On your feet!
They went down, following the lead of the grey-haired knight, down the vast corridors and hallways, until finally stepping into the main hall. This time, unlike when they had first arrived, the hall was bustling, filled with the Order's members. Knights, squires and initiates alike stood in quiet murmur. Atop the dais, with his personal bodyguard behind him, stood the Grand Master, a man Sigmir knew to be named Ulrich. Two men flanked him either side, both clearly soldiers given their uniforms, though each wore distinctly different colours. The older and much fatter of the two seemed to give off an air of arrogance. He, like the city guard he had seen upon entering Kalimdor, bore the blue and burgundy halved surcoats of the nation's army, the silver, jewel-headed hawk upon its breast standing out between the dark colours. The other, a much younger man, yet still older than Sigmir, wore the rich green of Arteria. Instead of golden threads upon his chest in stitching, a red sword and stars ran from neck to groin upon his tabard. His chainmail beneath looked expensive, but well used, and in need of much repair.
That's a red sword. He's from Amcairn. What's he doing here? He should be with the king.
As if to answer, Ulrich shouted for silence, and was granted it instantly.
My brothers and sisters, I have dark tidings for you. No, for all of us. This is Lord Draven, the commander of Fort Draiden, and this is Sergeant Cormac, one of the Red Swords of Amcairn. Both have sought audience with the king, and both tell of horrific news. One of the nation's border fortresses, Fort Draiden, in the very capital of Arteria, the city of Amcairn, are under siege as we speak.
Amcairn burns. The Lord King is safe with his loyal red swords. But the city is lost. Countless towns and villages also. We call upon Kalimdor for aid. We ask that its mighty order help us before the nation falls. Falls into the hands of those Nezrakar cultists.
Draiden Tomb, I have seen it with my eyes. I alone fought my way out of the castle gates. I slew many a demon, but I made it back to blessed Kalimdor.
It would seem the enemy has finally played its hand. For too long have they been plotting in the shadows. Things have been escalating for some time, and I admit I was foolish to not see it. The Icon of Shadows has rode out in my stead, and he is speaking to the High King in Alantir. He will ask for aid also. Let us pray this madness has not spread to Welfare.
Forget Welfare. Amcairn is under siege. We need the help of the Order. What say you? Will you help Arteria once again?
We will, Cormac. We will.
I am here to share command of the King's troops alongside High Commander Argarin. I assume you will be leading your vanguard of warriors, Grandmaster.
The Icon of War and Magics will lead the Order to battle. I have much to attend to here. The safeguarding of Vengard and this city will be my duty.
Then let's not wait. Let's mobilize for Amcairn and retake the city.
Grandmaster! Truly, you mean Draiden. It would make sense to go there first.
We march for Draiden first, and then on to Amcairn, as you say.
Grandmaster!
What is it? Speak your words.
Grand Master, the icon! The icon signal wishes you to make haste.
What is it? Spit it out, man, this is not the time!
The icon Anvardar! The joining ritual, he's dying!
Rowan. His feet sank into the ground as he walked. No longer the lush fields he once knew. No more golden sheaves of wheat swaying under the warmth of Salarin's rays. Instead, Bourne collapsed beneath his weight as he tread. Ash now replaced the soil. The charred remains of people who had once thrived here now lay burnt and scattered to the winds. Were it not for the buildings, which still remained intact, regardless of their scorching, he would never have recognized his homeland. The very sky itself seemed alien to him. The blue-grey ceiling of Arteria was gone. A fiery red stretched to the horizon, streaked with orange plumes, and a dark, rolling smog filled the heavens.
By the goddess, this is... Now this can't be right.
He walked, following the cobbled road that led to the Aflatha estate. The high, dry stone wall which flanked him upon approach was littered with bones and tanned flesh. Withered eyeballs impaled upon blackened tree branches, intestinal tracts and organs displayed between them, the sight turning his stomach in its viewing. The heavy doors were gone, now only a shadowed portal leading into this twisted version of his childhood home. He hesitated, his hand upon the stone of the archway. Even the bricks felt different to his touch.
Rowan, is that you?
Oldie, where are you? Stay where you are. I'm coming in.
Rowan.
He sprang forth, bounding through the now doorless entrance, his footfall a misstep onto unfamiliar ground. Instead of being greeted by the twin staircases, thick woven carpets and tapestries of the Aflatha family estate, he saw only open space. Around him, intricate patterned brickwork rose to incredible heights. The ancient language upon the brick face seemed somehow familiar to him, yet he had never laid eyes upon it before. Gone were the ceiling-hung braziers, the steady candlelight bouncing off the ancient suits of family armour which had stood at frozen attention upon the upper walkway. Now, only steps lay before him. Only the way down. Only a descent. The chamber was immense in scale. He glanced over the edge of the downward path with no fear of falling, yet the mist-filled void that confronted him made him feel uneasy all the same. He turned at the sound of approaching feet. And there he was, his face pale and withdrawn. Sunken eyes looked beyond weary and sore. His once black hair, now greying and patchy.
Aldwyn! Aldwyn! Aldwyn!
Tears began to rise within Rowan. The sight of his brother, so close to starvation, within the very grasp of death, broke the dam with which he had stemmed his emotions, shattered the walls which he had put up in order to protect himself from the truth. Yet now, confronted with it, he could no longer cope with the burden. He reached out a hand in a pathetic gesture, knowing full well he could not stop him. Yet he tried all the same. What was once his brother and close friend, now shuffled along, passing through him as if he were just the wind, stopping only for the briefest of moments, his expression vague as if listening to some unseen speaker. Then, without warning, continuing down, down towards a glow, which slowly began to engulf the chamber. Rowan sank to his knees, his heart slowly torn to pieces as he watched with a sense of agonizing futility the final moments of Alduin's life. Replacing the beaten down and haggard frame of his brother stood something else, something new, something horrifying and far darker than anything he'd ever known. It twisted upon a large cube of Aramar's stone, striking up a defensive pose, the muscle and skeleton bare and slick as it looked at him. No, not at him, but behind him. Out from the doorway, which opened at the pinnacle of the steps, bounded forth Anvidar, breaker in hand, roaring out his battle cry. He caught a fleeting glimpse of his companion as the world went dark around him once again, leaving the past to continue on without him. Candle flames bloomed in sequence, one by one till the surroundings were lit. Dark-robed men struck the ground with pickaxes and hammers, whilst others hurriedly removed the rubble, smashing and digging until the edge of yet another cube of Aramar's stone glinted from within its stone encasement.
Ithilek, Vergulf, Sephiriel, Anshar, and now, finally, Balran.
This is the last of them, my son.
It is, my lord Duke. If there are any others, they are unknown to us at this time.
I have all I need. Three of them would be more than adequate. Prepare the bodies immediately.
As you wish, my lord Astaroth.
Rowan was confused at first. What was he seeing? Was this the past, or what was yet to come? He knew he was being shown this for a reason, but what agenda this demon Valmaris held he could not say. He'd had little time to ponder before he was forced to witness something new again. Rowan found himself standing in the main hall of Vengard. The banner depicting the protectorate god Galador, a beautiful tapestry which had floated above the hall, suspended by unseen means, was now blood-soaked and lay strewn upon a pile of discarded bodies. The corpses seemed to stare his way, each holding a face he felt familiar to him. He recognized Samir, one of Ulrich's personal bodyguards amongst the dead, as he stepped closer. His feet left no signs of his passing, no trace in the pool of blood which had gathered, filling the gaps of the mosaic-tiled ground. Beyond the corpse pile, atop the dais, the marble table had been rent asunder, smashed to rubble. Behind, upon three of the five thrones sat skeletons, black and scorched as if the remains had been dragged from the pyre and perched in the seating. The centre throne, meant for the Grand Master, held one, as well as the Icon of Knowledge's chair. The last belonged to the Icon of War, the seating reserved for his friend Anvidar. He took one step towards the dais, and then a feeling stopped him, an urge to look behind, and so he did. Five writhing shadows paced behind it, moving like stalking wolves or chained beasts hungry for flesh. They were held at bay, at the command of another. Whether out of fear or respect, he could not say as he paid them little heed, for the creature that stood before him chilled his marrow at the mere sight of it. His very soul was afraid. He looked at its four glowing eyes, the yellow infernal light menacing and deadly. Its muscular frame beyond imposing, with talon-like hands, which looked fit to render flesh and steel alike. A And then he saw it. The familial face. Black hair much like his own. Those eyes as green as his. And the pleading look they now gave. As the demonic visage blended entirely into the face of his brother Alduin.
Rowan, brother, you found me. Do you not recognize me?
The face changed back and forth, phasing from human to the demon.
I need your help, Rowan. I need you to save me.
Alduin, I can't. I can't.
It's the only way, Rowan. Look what I've done. Look what I'm going to do.
Part by part, brick by brick, the halls of Vengard began to tear away like pieces of a jigsaw being removed, only to reveal the true picture beneath. He fought for the briefest of moments he had returned to where his vigil had started, fought he had been brought back to the hellish landscape that is the bloodlands of Bael'Goroth. But then he saw it. The ruins of what had once been high walls. The very archways he'd passed through upon entering the city with its towers and noble estates. The wealthier, steel gates leading to what had once been a wondrous palace. This place had once been Kalendor, the city of the Protectorate God. Now, a pit of fiends. Dark armoured knights with rusted and ebon plate sat atop fell steeds as they roamed the bloodstained streets, hoping to find yet another victim in hiding. Screeching bat-winged demons roamed the smog-filled sky in search of their prey. Roaming packs of hellion wretches scaled the scorched walls, blackened bones now made up its foundations, ash and blood its mortar. The flesh of the people, its bricks.
Orin.
Desperate to deal with the irritation, he released his grasp upon the horse's reins and scratched away the itch. Last he checked, he'd been surprised how well the skin had healed in the space of only a day. This was the price Orin had paid to be allowed freedom within the halls of Vengard. From the very moment he stepped foot within the temple fortress, he'd been surrounded by armed knights and placed under guard. Though it was voluntary, an Aegis had been seared into his flesh. The immense pain he felt from having the glowing steel pressed down into his skin surprisingly passed shortly after. He had been given a tonic, a drink, a remedy of sorts, and it had dulled the burning pain completely. So much, in fact, were it not for the heat still emanating from his chest, he could easily have forgotten about it. As it turned out, Kreer was not the only one who could see into the future. The Grand Master of the Order, a man named Ulrich, had ordered his capture and was to be held in a form of quarantine until it was deemed safe for him to walk within the halls. The hunter had gone willingly. After all, he'd ventured here in search of answers, and he knew it would do no good to put up any form of resistance. With an assurance of his safety from Anvidar, a man whom Kreer trusted, and so, in turn, Orin would trust from her vouching, the man of Vale of Glas would await these answers, waiting within a warded cell.
I have much to learn, but I am keen to do so. I have always wanted to know how to read a book, and now there is a whole room filled with them, and they are at my fingertips.
Yeah, I'm happy for you, lad. You got that drink for me?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, what's this, mead? Yeah. Suppose it'll have to do. I haven't seen much of Kreer since I got myself locked away. What about yourself?
She has been busy with the Grand Master and Anvidar. Nobody will tell me why. I'm just an initiate. He had met with the Icon Sigil for the first time later that day. The bearded sage had been the first to step into the holding, and did his best to assure Orin this was for his own good. The thought of being a prisoner once more terrified him. Yet, he was treated well. All except for the lack of wine.
Well, it seems I'm out of tests. Whatever it is inside of you, Orin, will not be goaded or prompted out. What worries me the most is, although it does not appear to respond to our usual methods when dealing with demonic entities, if it is in fact a demon, then it has ways and means beyond my understanding.
Ah, right, I see. So basically what you're saying is, it's stuck in there, and you know about as much as I do about it.
Not quite. There has been some mention in the ancient scriptures from Sontara, though the parchments they are written on are crumbling and require great care when being handled, a task I trust to none but myself. Regardless, what I have discerned is, it may possibly be...
Possibly be what?
Well, the scripture is a Sondaran translation of an Eridan account, but the best I can distinguish from my own translation is a name. Cref Anuk, an agent, herald of Yorandwir, great devourer. One of the gods worshipped by the Ven, amongst some others.
Aye, Sigmir spoke of him. He eats the moon.
Yes, well, this Cref Anuk is said to seek out a host, much like a demon, except he hides his presence, acting as a passenger of sorts, using an opportunity to skip from host to host in the hope of seeking out his final vessel.
What do you mean, his final vessel?
It speaks of rebirth and the usual vague prophetical nonsense you get from these old texts. Cref Anuk is said to be the herald of Yorandwir, and he will clear a path for his coming, whatever that means.
Well, unless he's fallen asleep in there, I can't be the final host. Otherwise, we'd know by now, wouldn't we?
As I said, prophetical nonsense. I have a theory that your excessive consumption of wine has kept the entity at bay, though I know not why. But something I will have to delve deeper into once my other duties are fulfilled.
So does this mean I can come out now? You've brought me some more red?
In part, yes. Though we will be requiring one thing of you first.
After he had rested up, he and Sigmir had enjoyed a meal together. The pair gorged themselves, making up for the lack of good food and drink upon the road. Yet even that good time had come to an abrupt end, as both he and the Venice youth had been ushered into the main hall, and there, alongside the others who served the order, had been told the dark tidings. Not only had the fortress along the border of Kalimdor been attacked by servants of Nezrakar, but his homeland capital, Amkairen, was now under siege. What had happened? None but the planners and actors of this vile play could know for certain, but now, as he rode alongside Kreia, as well as the countless others who made up the Order's knights, and the majority of Kalimdor's standing army, he was sure of only one thing. Death had come to Arn, and none had seen it coming. The old hunter rode alongside Kreia in the vanguard. A few hundred or so knights of the Order, as well as an unknown number of squires and initiates, rode at the army's spearhead. Sergeant Cormac, a fellow Arterian and one of its red swords, an elite soldier from within the palace guard of Amkairen, pushed his mount to a steady gallop, riding up the line to reach Kreia and the senior knights who rode beside her.
It feels strange, this. Riding into battle without my brothers in arms. Not to mention doing so alongside Kalimdor's soldiers.
The Order has no nation, Sergeant. They fight for the people of Arn.
Of course.
Besides, if it makes you feel any better, I'm from Arteria as well.
A northerner, is it? Well met, kinsman.
Aye, well met. And we're in Braemouth, Vale of Glas.
Sergeant Willem Cormac.
Aye, a red sword as well as a sergeant. You're a man to stand with.
My titles will count for little, lest we make haste to Emcairn.
We both know that's not going to happen. Regardless of the Order's neutral stance, Drayden is on the way. It makes sense to.
We've made peace with the fact that Emcairn may well have fallen. My sole purpose was to protect the king. But I was sent here to ask for aid, and I still have a duty to bring that aid back to the city, kinsman. I had thought the Grand Master would be coming with us. The news of this demon is to be believed, we'll need his strength.
I'll tell you now, lad. See her there, the Lady Kriya. She'll have a handle on it. I have no doubt about that.
Orin nodded towards Kriya as he spoke. Never had he seen anyone wield power the way she did. He could not imagine a foe able to withstand her.
Besides, we've got many knights here with us. They know magics as well.
Sir, what's your role in the Order, Orin?
I have none, Sergeant. I came to them with questions.
And this is how you get answers?
Not quite. Well, this is returning a favour. Call it payback. We've got a bit of history, me and those black robe wearing freaks.
Are you any good with that?
Cormac pointed to the bow hanging from Orin's saddle.
Oh aye. It's been a while since I've used one, mind. And this will be my first time using a war bow. And my first time going to battle. Needless to say, I'll be staying well back.
Orin had made a point of thanking Sigulf. The grumpy icon of knowledge had provided him with healing for his shoulder. The concoction had worked wonders. The deep ache, as well as the new injuries he'd procured at the hands of Eastwald's cultists, had disappeared within the day. A small miracle, to be sure. It wasn't until the pain was fully gone that he'd realised how much he'd gotten used to it. Now he would put his renewed shoulder to the test, and for the first time in a long time, pull back a bowstring without the burning. The road had been easy going for them. A steady march under consistent gloomy skies, a grey day to match the grey mood of the Order. Many had thought that should this day ever arrive, when they would no longer act as agents partaking in small missions and tasks, and instead return to the days of old, fighting as a unit, fighting as a vanguard amongst the army, they would finally be led by their Grand Master or their icon of war. Yet Ulrich had stayed behind, and Anvidar lay dead in Vengart, a loss even Orin had felt, for in the short time they had known each other, Orin had begun to like the man. A ritual gone wrong, they had said. Madness, he thought. What kind of ritual was worth the risk that a man can die in its performance? He'd been quick to compare his own experience and wondered if there was any real difference between these factions, other than the god they served. The combined forces of the Order's knights and soldiers sent from Kalimdor marched through the narrowing pass that led into the Iron Dales. This was the final few miles before reaching the fortress, and it would slow their progress greatly, as the men were forced into double file rather than marching in the rows of 10 they had begun in. Orin was alerted by Kriya's movements as she forced her way through the ranks, riding ahead of the column. The sound of tumbling rocks drew his attention away, bounding down the valley, catching air as they struck outcroppings. It wasn't until the first rolled in front of him did he realise just what these boulders really were. A bruised and bloodied face stared up at Orin as it rolled to a stop. The severely dented helmet, which cradled the severed head inside, belonged to one of the scouts they had sent ahead of the army. As if to accompany the chilling sight, a cold wind howled through the valley. The noise filled his ears as it tore past him, blocking out the raging flow of the River Dray as it crashed by to his left
blocked out the clatter and pounding of the marching army, blocked out the sputter of his distressed mount, and blocked out the terrifying screech of the screamer hounds that now crested the hills above them.
Kriya.
She had felt their presence before the deathly screech filled the air, and in retaliation, kicked her mount to a gallop, heading off in front of the marching army.
Lady Kriya!
The icon of magics ignored the call to her and pushed on ahead. The feeling had made her skin crawl, her vision blurring slightly at its edges. What now approached, she questioned. What unseen doom awaited to reveal itself?
Enemies on the right flank!
By Ganador, what are they?
Screamer hounds! To arms! Every man to arms!
Lock your shield! Lock your shields!
Stand and fight! For the order! For Ganador!
Spears rose and shields became as one as the screamers poured in from atop the ridgeline. Their silhouettes, dark contrast against the grey sky, a violent mass of flesh, muscle, bone and teeth bounding down towards the army like a horde of ravaging wolves. Archers knocked arrows and loosed them into the reanimated beasts, yet on they came in the hundreds. For an ambush it had been ill-timed. A shield wall the length of the army had risen, and using the ample warning they have given, the army was prepared for the onslaught. Kriya slid her mount to a halt and looked back. The threat she sensed was far greater than this necromantic swarm, and she could feel it pulling at her, begging her to seek it out. She could not leave the fight behind. As she rode in, she caught sight of Orin, standing back from the line, taking mere seconds to pick out his targets before letting his arrows fly. The swift, effortless skill with which he carried it out impressed even Kriya, and she knew without looking he was hitting his marks every time. The first of the enemy smashed against the shield wall, some bounding over the front line or scurrying underneath, their canine-like jaws snapping at legs and groins. Yet they were dispatched quickly before they could break the lines or cause much harm to the gathering soldiers. Spears took those that came in too close, swords hacked and maces bludgeoned, yet on the enemy came.
Hold the line!
Holding out her hand, Kriya called upon the magics from within her. Not often did she use Ignis, preferring the call of lightning and its devastating effect, yet now it seemed the apt choice. Kriya had endured the slow, agonizing pain of sharp incisions into her flesh. Sigulf and Ulrich had performed these rites, scarring permanent sigils into her skin, allowing their use at any time she called upon them.
You need only draw blood, Kriya, and these magics will be at your command.
This, when coupled with surviving through the ritual of binding, had increased her power tenfold, coming close to a near rival for the Grand Master himself. And now, as she charged in, fire sprouting from her hands, engulfing them entirely. She stood in the saddle as the flames rose up each arm, reaching the pinnacle of her shoulders as she balanced her way towards the enemy. Gouts of flame erupted from within the screamer hounds. Some exploded entirely, others, their heads or torsos blasted from within by spears of flame, turned to cinders by the heat of a sunflare. She reached out, grasping at her targets in the air in front of her, as if snuffing them out. Glancing again over towards Orin, who was still loosing arrows into the mass of hounds, Kriya twisted up her fingers, and upon completion of the action, the arrows ignited mid-flight. Along the Order's lines, these knights who had given no ground nor taken any losses, had their weapons take the flame instead. Wielding their blades, now infused with fire, they tore into the ambush with ease. But it was then Kriya felt it. The sensation like a jolt of lightning running up the length of her spine. That she could do naught to react to it. There was no time, and no way to give warning.
In surprise, she lost her concentration. The elemental magic Ignis faded from her control, and in perfect unison, so too did it fade from her allies. From beneath the raging waters of the River Dray, smashing up through its almost black current, came an immense demon, unlike anything she had been witness to before. Four arms spread wide, smashing into the defenders' ranks as they swung closed. Thick, black talons tore into the exposed flanks of the Knight's Order, its immense hands snatching up men and mount alike, tearing them apart like wet parchment, spilling their blood and organs upon the sodden ground. Its skull-like face roared again as the demonic behemoth made its way and stepped onto the land, a mouth dripping with thick saliva and savage teeth bellowing out its bestial cry.
Kriya! Kriya! What do we do?
Snatching up her mount's reins, Kriya wheeled the horse around, looking behind to the road ahead and then back to the way to Kalendor. She nodded at Orin, who grabbed Sergeant Cormac back from the shield wall.
Retreat! Retreat back to Kalendor! Back to the city!
Orin kicked his mount into a gallop, as did many others. The foot-bound soldiers turned to run, and the screamer hounds took them down as they did. Kriya called upon Ignis once again, and torched the land as she passed, leaving a wall of flame between the fleeing army and the still-coming mass of hounds. As they retreated, many were unlucky, and were either dragged from the saddle, crushed alongside their horses, or pulled up into the air to be rent asunder by this huge demon. Kriya looked back one final time. In the distance, marching down the road they had sought to take, came the cultists. As she shook her head in disbelief, a knight screamed from above her, his agonized plea ending in a shower of blood as the demon tore him in half, devouring his legs and discarding the wailing torso to the ground below. They would all die here unless they fled. And so they did. That was Chapter 1, Part 14b. So, Part C will be coming shortly, as I'm in the process of writing it and getting it out to you all. In the meantime, please join me on my Patreon, help fund this show and get Season 2 off the ground. There's also a Reddit page if you want to chat with fellow listeners as well as myself, at r/Aferin, or you can follow me on Twitter at AferinPodcast. While you wait for the next episode, please listen to the following trailers from friends of this show. Thanks for listening.
Hi everyone, my name is Gabe, and you've been listening to the excellently crafted Aetherin Dark Saga, one of my favorite shows. While we wait for the new season to start up, please enjoy this trailer for my own show, the sci-fi action thriller Starcalled, available wherever you find your podcasts. Thank you for listening. At the edge of the charted universe, Starcalled follows the dangerous lives of Lieutenant Serenus Kron.
He's dangerous! That makes him our enemy!
And Dr. Ilona Zorin.
Could start a war with the Holkari Empire.
Two young officers in the 443rd Colonial Fleet Infantry as they unravel a galactic conspiracy under the ever-looming specter of war.
Academy didn't just train you to fight and kill!
Walk on the Mustang, go and get me the right out of here!
To learn more, visit us at starcalled.space.
Hello, and let me tell you about Twisted Britain, a podcast on true crime in Britain with a sprinkling of the weird and the macabre. Your hosts are me, Bob Dale.
And me, Nadine Royal. We're a couple of friends who met in the pub, and we developed a friendship based on our mutual love of booze, podcasts, and pub quizzes. We met in the Settle Inn in Stirling, and that's where we record.
Each week, we both tell a story of something twisted. One long one, and one short one. And we decide who goes first.
Based on the flip of a coin.
So if that sounds like something that would tickle your fancy, you can always find us wherever you normally find your podcasts.
Just search for Twisted Britain. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.
No, please.
Coming late 2017, Season 2 of Subject Found. A new monster, a new story. For more information or updates on the show, head over to paulsadian.com and sign up for the newsletter while you're there. All that is lost must be found.